Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, this will be a fun one.
Yeah, it is.
You know, this is the first time, and it's been months. No PR people
here. I know. I'm kind of, it's like nobody's sitting right there.
Yeah, taking pictures.
Right.
I'm a little kind of
a little thrown.
Shaken by this. But we'll go boldly forward because that's what we do here.
Yes.
All right. On today's show, we're going to have Travis Vickers, and he's with Boggs Vickers. And then a little later, we'll have Daryl Rogers with Emerald Data Network. We're going to kick it off with Travis. Welcome, Travis. Tell us a little bit about Boggs Vickers. How are you serving folks?
Basically, we started in 2011, right in the middle of the downturn, doing architecture and interior design.
Architecture and interior design. So the architecture is the building itself, and the interior design is the stuff that's in the building?
Correct.
Is that, do they typically go together like that?
Sometimes. Depends on the firm. You have a lot of firms that'll just do interior design. Others that'll just do architecture, and may bring in other teams to do a little bit of both. For us, it's always been a continual support system between the two. We find that, you know, the buildings are always fun to do, but people tend to remember the stuff they can touch and feel
on the inside.
That's right.
So now, how'd you get started?
Company-wise or personally?
Personally, you have a degree in architecture?
Correct. So my dad was an architect.
Oh, wow. Is that common? Like it's a family thing?
Yeah, I think it's continual suffrage to get into the architecture field.
Is it a creative field or is it like kind of a math field?
More of a creative field. I think, you know, the architecture piece is creative with a little bit of a, you know, structural understanding and math and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of overlap between using both sides of the brain, I guess we joke about.
Right. So you saw your dad doing it, and what'd you like about that?
I did. I think it's almost ingrained in you a little bit, attention to detail, the seeing how things go together, pulling things apart, building stuff.
And there must be a lot of pride in that at the end you can point to it and say, you know, I was involved in that.
Correct. Yeah. I think it's, you know, different from a product, but, you know, you do get to hopefully the structures we build and the spaces we design stand around for a little while. To where you can, you know, multiple generations may see them, or you may just get to drive by them for a couple years and say, hey, we did that.
Right. Now, did you ever consider working for your father or working together?
I did. He had his own company for a while. And then the recession in 92, he closed down his company. So I kind of saw the ebb and flow of owning your own company the same as we have. So
right out of school, you went to work for somebody?
Correct. I was working in Orlando after graduating from Florida, and then worked down there for a little while for a company that did airports and hotels mostly. Then moved up here, worked for a company that did a bunch of school work, hotel work, then moved back to Orlando to the original company to work on a hotel project that they wanted me to lead. While I was down there, met a group that was looking to start an Atlanta branch. And that's when I came back up here to start that Atlanta branch.
And then do firms typically specialize in those types of buildings? Like we're good at, you know, warehouses or something?
I think you sometimes fall into that. Uh-huh. You either fall into it or you directly market towards a certain product type that you are very, you know, one of the experts in.
But I see on your website, it seems like you have a variety.
It is. We have it's funny because we've somewhat grown organically. Mm-hmm. You know, we started in 2011 when no one was really building buildings.
Right.
So we had to rely on our interior design capabilities for a lot of the projects that we had.
Because people were taking existing buildings and then just refreshing them?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of repositioning, you know, of the buildings that were existing. The interiors was an easy, less risk market for us to be in as a startup with that no overhead and contract employees. We had this grand vision.
So you can flex.
Yes. Right. Yes. And so what that did is we had restaurant experience. My business partner did a bunch of casino work. You know, every casino has five restaurants
in it. Right, exactly. So it's good job security.
The portfolio grew very quickly.
And they like to refresh them.
Right, right. Right. And so for us, it was, you know, starting to get some restaurant work, some office work that we had done previously as well. some of that grew organically into retail work. We did some local restaurant work for Tin Lizzy's and Gypsy Kitchen is the same ownership. While at Gypsy Kitchen, the owners of the Streets of Buckhead or Shops at Buckhead, whatever it's called now, is they wanted us to start working with some of the other retailers. So then we ended up doing 9 retail spaces in.
Oh, and that's like the premier kind of our Rodeo Drive.
Right. That's in Buckhead. That was the goal of it. And
Did you work on that gelato place in there?
We did not. We worked on the flywheel.
Right.
So the opposite end of that. You go to gelato and then go to flywheel.
So are there certain challenges and different, like, you know, restaurant has certain kind of idiosyncrasies and must-haves and you got to work within it. And then like a flywheel would have other.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that's what's been fun for us is not focusing on one project type and being able to have this diversification so that, you know, not just the owners, but all of our staff get to experience, you know, a lot of different project types that really take a lot of individual design ideas and expertise across the board. So we can actually pull from our different project types, you know, corporate office now, the lobby and the break room are pulling from restaurant world or hotel world. And so there's this overlap of project type just from finishes and look, feel, and what people are trying to do to retain and recruit staff. So for us, it's, you know, the specialties of a restaurant may be a little different with the equipment requirements versus the finishes versus the look and feel of the furniture. We're doing a lot of breweries now. You know, they're even more specialized because of the equipment that they're bringing in there and how they want to work, and especially the growth of them. You know, most of the projects we work on aren't growth after 1 year.
Because some of those breweries are, they're manufacturers, really, right?
Correct.
And then they're also restaurants and bars.
Well, and with SB 85 passing last year, what's happened is now they can sell the beer on at their own location, which they couldn't do before. And so last September, that kind of changed. And now everyone is basically brewing their beer, and they don't necessarily have to distribute it. They can just sell
it.
They can sell it on premises.
Which is a different kind of experience for the customer.
Correct. Totally different model. So you can have small, now microbreweries or nano breweries could have, you know, 1,000 square feet of space and they could be selling beer there.
Right.
Or you've got like a new realm that's, you know, 15,000, 20,000 square feet, but they're distributing it all over the place. Yep.
So now when a company is looking at design or interior design as a recruitment tool, how do you approach that differently? Like if you're saying, okay, we're trying to recruit, you know, young people in here. So how do you stay on top of what are the things that they like or don't like?
Well, I think it's interesting because every company has a different goal with new space. And so we try to dig in, find out their story. You know, do they want it? Is it client focused? Is it recruiting and retention focused?
Because it would be different, right? If their client never goes into the building,
right,
then you have different things you can do in there.
Right.
But if they come in all the time, then you have to kind of...
If you're trying to recruit young tech talent from, you know, Georgia Tech, you know, then you're creating a hip, cool break room. You're creating a nap room. You're creating, you know, millennial focused type.
So how do you kind of learn about that?
I think it's their experience of interviewing the staff, interviewing the leadership of these companies, and understanding what their challenges have been with recruiting and retaining their talent.
So you talk to them, do the people know? Like, you know, you ask them, they're like, yeah, we want scooters. And then it's like, you're like, okay, we got to buy scooters. And then you put a bunch of scooters and like, nobody's ever using
them. I think a lot of it's experimental. It's just like that. It's, you know, we planned one space for a tech company here in town and put a bike room in.
Right.
Because their thought was everyone's going to bike to work.
Exactly.
Then we get almost to building it out, and the building wouldn't let them bring bikes upstairs. So the bike room's now a little collaborative seating area.
Right.
So it's very experimental. I think it's having a client that's open to new ideas and how far you push the envelope, because obviously it's budget-driven as well.
Sure.
You know, so how far can you push that envelope to give them something that they think is unique? And then we kind of pull the design back to where we did a space up at Avalon that had a really cool sunburst type ceiling lighting layout. And the lighting we brought down in cost by going to, you know, standard fluorescent 8-foot fixtures, mm-hmm. you know, so it's more about the look than the actual fixture.
But a lot of times the person, the company or client doesn't know, right? Like they're looking to you for
correct
kind of guidance on this.
Yes.
And then do you constantly have to deal with the people that are like, I don't know it until I see it. And then once I see it, then I either like it or, you know, when it's kind of too late.
Very much so. Well, that's where we're, you know, trying to push that envelope to get into virtual reality mm-hmm. to be able to allow, you know, clients to actually see and visualize what their space will be.
So you use virtual and augmented reality? You have like apps and stuff to go
more
see
virtual,
this wall and then you can show them the wall?
Well, the technology we use is Revit. Revit mm-hmm. is, you know, the old AutoCAD.
Right.
What that does is allows us to actually build the space and then we can apply all of the finishes and furniture to where we could either do a pan and zoom that we can send out, or you could physically put on a Oculus headset and walk around the space.
Okay, so they can go into an empty room or not even the room and just kind of see physically what it would be like, what it would feel like to sit in the space and look around and look out the window.
Correct.
And so then, and that's pretty accurate?
It's pretty accurate, I think.
Like
you
scary
know,
accurate?
Sometimes. Sometimes, it's, you know, you don't want to give, you know, the best idea into mm-hmm. them and everything that's associated with that, the most costly, because at some point it cost does come into
right.
it, you know, so you could go crazy and design this amazing space and they may love it. And then when it comes down to pricing, it may get dialed
right,
back.
Yeah. And then they're like, whoa, I didn't realize it was
right.
It so, looked, it was right there. I saw it.
Exactly.
So how much could it be?
Right. And so, you know, everything comes down to cost and
right.
the construction market is extremely high right now. And so what people were getting 5 years ago is nowhere near what they're getting now for the same cost.
Now, what about how have you seen technology kind of evolve in the industry?
Is it that
3D and all the kind of the Oculus? And
that
changes things.
It does tremendously. It's almost like you can play a video game in the spaces that we design now.
Like how quickly can you get it to the stage where they can see it?
Very
as opposed
quickly.
To like where you used to maybe had to draw things and it would be back and forth.
From what my dad was doing to
right.
what we've been doing.
Is he like blown years. Away? Is it like science fiction for him?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really cool to see what he used to do on a drawing board where now we're doing, you know, in the computer.
But in the time, it's shrunk too, right?
It has and it hasn't. The production has shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about the amount that goes into every space, the back and forth with the clients, making sure that they're understanding what you're trying to do. The actual putting the pieces together has shrunk, but you've also increased the level of detail that you have to
and
get into.
And the complexity of actually pulling all that off.
Well, and you're doing it sooner.
Right.
So in the you know, the schedule of a project, you wouldn't get to the details of exactly how something's being built until you get into construction documents way down the road. Now you're thinking about it at the beginning of the project. And the finishes and the details and the lighting and everything like that more at the beginning. So it's changed the bell curve of the production.
So now, but because of the technology, you probably from a price standpoint have a better idea of what the end price is, right? Like, don't you know, like when you put it all in the computer and lean on all the technology, you probably know. We're going to need 14,621 bricks.
We're getting very close to that. I just had a conversation yesterday with a guy that we had just this conversation that was, okay, how soon is it going to be before, as you're drawing, it will immediately know the cost of it. But then it's keeping up with it, and then
right.
it's the different markets.
And there's things, you know, you get, and all of a sudden something unexpected happens, you know.
Right. The cost of steel might go
right.
up. You know, there may be a labor shortage. You know, like we had last year with the two stadiums being built here.
Right, at the same time.
Correct. And so, you know, drywall was through the roof and you had people, just the subs were moving people around so much because there was so much work.
And then is there a shortage of talent?
There's a tremendous shortage of talent.
Like on the architecture side? So engineer and designer side?
Yes, construction side. I'm hearing it.
Everywhere?
Everywhere.
Really?
Where, you know, I think the constant with every conversation I have is, well, we're looking for people if you know of anyone.
Really?
Yeah.
So how do you kind of manage that? Because the economy does flex. So
correct. So for us, it's, you know, we're always looking for superstars. So for us, it's more word of mouth. It's more, you know, conversation. It's people we've met.
Like friends of friends is how you do a lot of your recruiting?
A lot of that. because it's hard to blindly find someone, you know, through a recruiter.
You can't just go on LinkedIn
like
and put architect.
You can a little bit. You know, we've tried all methods. I mean, we've had multiple recruiters. We've gone through LinkedIn. We've gone really? Through people we know.
What about, do you ever like find that small solopreneur firm? Is that a good prospect, or they tend to be too kind of independent?
Well, it's interesting. There's people either who want to own their own firm and be a business person, or right. they want to be an architect. And right. so it's hard to be both of those at the same time. And I think that, you know, we know several people that are out on their own that are sole proprietorships and doing well. And so I think it's, you know,
so when they go in that path, then they tend to be, okay, I want to be, but that's why I'm here, is because I don't want to have a boss and I don't.
Correct. And they may have enough work to keep them busy. Right. For us, it's beyond that, where we start out two of us in our basement.
So you started out as that person.
We did. We right. did. Except we had two of us.
Two of you.
So
right. That makes it easier.
Yeah. We already doubled our overhead from day one.
But you have someone to complain with, right?
That's right. That's right. Or help out.
Right.
But then after the first, we had a grand idea coming out in 2011 that we could use all contract people, because mm-hmm. a lot of the design staff was laid off in 2011.
Right. And you thought, wow, this is, they're at the ready. We just make a call, bam, bam, we right. got three, and then we don't need three anymore. So now we're
exactly.
back to me and you.
Yeah, we used nine in the first year. So it was like herding cats. So that was the challenge.
So then you decided, you know what, we got to have employees.
We said we have to be a big boy firm and get some space and some full-time employees. And
so that took a year for that realization?
Took a year and a half maybe.
It's that learning curve.
Quick learning curve.
So now, what are some of the work that you're most proud of?
So I think, you know, the fortunate part for us is we've done some very diverse work. And, you know, for us, it's, you know, like I said, each one tells a story. So I think, you know, determining the ones that are you're more proud of may be more the story than the right. actual finished product. You know, we just finished a project down in Forest Park. Ground up project for Vanguard Trucking. The, you know, the story behind that one was it was 12 acres that was the highest crime area in Forest Park. So now it's a cleaned up, nice trucking center with a brand new building that's pretty contemporary looking and very cool.
And that kind of work really can impact the whole community, right? Because now it's kind of a rebranding of the area. Like in your head, you when drove by, you saw a certain thing and maybe you jumped to certain conclusions. And now when you drive by it, it's not the same
right.
thing.
It's a brand new building, nice landscaping. Right. It used to be trees and an old dilapidated office building that had all sorts of crime going on around it, where, you know, every time the owner had to go down there, they had to have a police escort just to look at the land they were going to buy.
Right. That's crazy.
But then, you know, we did a building for Dennis Taylor Company that is a family-owned company, and it was, okay, let's continue our legacy for our kids who are now taking over the business. And
so they wanted like kind of a monument, something they were proud of.
Exactly.
A legacy.
Exactly. So they built a building that, you know, kind of reflected that and that all of us were very proud of at the end of it. Mm-hmm. So
now when you're walk me through the process. So like at what point are they going, I got to call Travis?
Like, hopefully from the first time they have an idea.
So the idea
something.
Like, okay, we think we're going to build something. Like, are they building a short list or how does it work from the client?
It all depends. It all depends. You know, we'll get involved from the very beginning when someone has an idea. You know, and that's probably the best time to get involved.
So you're okay a year or 2 years before they even.
Absolutely.
To yeah. just start having a conversation.
Yes.
About what could be.
Yes. Yep, I have a friend who just graduated from Auburn's Brewing Sciences program.
So he wants to have a brewery.
Yeah, she wants to start her own brewery.
Okay.
And
so you're good. Let's talk.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is stuff that we've done. Start looking over here. Start
exactly.
thinking about these things. So
exactly.
then at least that helps formulate some of their thinking.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, we have a lot of friends in the market and can help with real estate, can help with, you know, project management, construction, pricing, everything along the way to give them, you know, a little more information than they would have if they just go, hey, let's go find
let's
a building
Google
and
this.
Go.
Right.
So
now that's part of your service then is kind of you're giving them a holistic view of the entire project?
For some clients, yes. You know, we'll bring in other team members because we obviously pricing wise, we don't have our, you know, finger on the pulse of the sub-market for construction every day of the week. So we have a lot of construction teammates that, you know, depending on the project, we'll bring in different contractors to help out with preliminary pricing. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's interesting, the project types we have, a corporate office is looking to be as efficient with what their costs are for the most part, because what is their true realization or the return on that investment? Are they really getting more employees because they're spending more on that light fixture?
Right.
There's no, you know, qualitative data to actually prove that. Yet a restaurant, you know, outside of the food, if their ambiance is really great or if they have some really cool features or something very unique in there, you know, they're going to attract more people there and they have instant revenue from that.
Right.
You know, so there's a little differentiation between the project type with how they're willing to look at the cost of stuff.
Right. And then they look at it more as a cost rather than an investment.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's part of what you're trying to do is explain to them the difference.
Right. And so, you know, we get to hear the stories. We get to be alongside them. You know, what we tell our employees is someone who's building a little 2,500 square foot office that is their, you know, their dreams and their heart and souls going into it is just as important as a 100,000 square foot office that's being relocated from one building to another, and maybe even more difficult to do because they're that much more involved in it.
Right. And they have less space, less choices, right?
Correct. Probably a smaller budget.
Right.
So
you got to be more creative.
Exactly. So,
but it's the most important thing that client's going to be doing. So you want to get that right.
Correct. Absolutely. You know, we invest a lot of ourselves into our projects and to our clients, you know, and that's the great part about our profession is we do get to be there along the way. We get to ride with them in their journey and see them from, you know, maybe they were a little startup at Atlanta Tech Village and then they grew into another space and now they're taking on space themselves. And so, you know, we're doing one project that did just that. And so it's fun to see them grow and to be part of that growth to help them retain and recruit clients.
Right, and
talent.
Take their business to the next level.
Correct.
So now what's next for you guys?
Well, at the beginning of this year, we just restructured our company in order to create a more specialized team to allow us to grow even further. So the project types that we mentioned, now we've split ourselves up into studios that will allow us to actually be more attentive to the clients and the project
so
types that we work
now
on.
You're kind of have a wide range of projects, but do you have specialists now? Like, do you have a brewery specialist now? Or is that you? It's probably you, right?
I do like beer.
So you have brewery, because that's one of your niches, right?
We have what, special projects.
That's what you call, that's where it fits in
special
now?
Special projects is kind of breweries, restaurants, anything that's not office related, really, on the interior side. And then we've got a corporate interiors group that's the bigger projects that are tenant-driven.
Right.
Where the tenant will bring us in on it, and then we've got... We do a lot of landlord work in Atlanta, so we're the on-call design team for a lot of the buildings in Atlanta.
So it'll be a large building, and they'll say, okay, somebody's taking over the sixth floor, to them.
Correct, which is a nice repeat client base. And then we have an architecture group as well that kind of blends in and over all of the
and
other
And then kind
interiors.
Of uses those different resources as they need it.
Exactly. So, you know, and that's the nice part about how we're set up is doing both of them. Allows, you know, hey, your architects can't forget about the interiors, and interiors, hey, you can't forget about the architecture.
Right.
So
now, if somebody wanted to learn more and have more substantive conversation, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Visit our website first and foremost, www.bogsvickers.com. Has all of our information and contact info on there.
And you can see some photographs of your work and
correct.
See some of the clients you work with.
Yep. All the exciting work gets put on there.
Exactly.
But we do a lot of not exciting stuff,
right,
too.
Right, the day-to-day stuff. So that's Boggs, B-O-G-G-S, Vickers, V-I-C-K-E-R-S.com. Travis Vickers, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you very much.
All right, hang with us. Got one more guest. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, I got Daryl Rogers, president of Emerald Data Networks. Welcome, Daryl.
Thank you.
So tell us about Emerald. How are you serving folks?
Well, we were started originally in 1988 to actually provide music to the sports teams here in Atlanta.
Music?
We played audio at all the Braves, Hawks, and Falcons games. So when you're sitting there, you know, in between innings, right, they'll come on, play a little ditty, and everybody will get up and dance or, you know, that kind of thing. That's how we started out. And then back then we carried a portable computer that was, you know, about 150 pounds. It had all the music files on it. And people started asking us questions about, you know, how to deal with computers and computing and different things. And that's how we kind of got into the consulting business. And now we help organizations decide what technologies to use and how to use them for their business.
So now when you say technologies, are you doing the IT work? Or are you helping them with their website? Like where the lines kind of drawn?
There, you know, technology is quite pervasive. There aren't many lines left anymore. But we started out doing computing. We started doing phones in the early 90s. We do website work. We do online cloud. We deal with everything from laptops to cell phones to audio equipment. You know, we're big on making sure that everything works together to the benefit of the individual business, because each maker, like a Chromebook or an Apple, you know, they kind of tell you how they want you to use their product, but right, it might not make sense for what you want to do with it.
So now, but do you do, like, if somebody says, do my website, you'll do that too?
We don't actually do the creative work to do a website, so we wouldn't, like, come in and take pictures of you in your office and pick out colors and that sort of thing. We do the hosting, and we do the technical pieces, so we would help you decide what does it need to run on, what will make it easy for somebody to be able to update it on a regular basis, maybe someone out of your office instead of outsourcing that.
So, like, webmaster activities?
Yeah, sort of. Webmaster activities. It would certainly fall into our purview to do those things. And we have a lot of customers who do host their sites on our systems and on systems that we administer for them, and that we help with external systems, like if they're hosting on GoDaddy or Google.
And then do you help them if they want to migrate to the cloud or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been pretty popular for the past 10, 15 years. A lot of people wanting to go to the cloud for different things, for security reasons, for ease of access. You know, quite a proliferation of moving parts. And so that's one of the biggest requests that we get is, how do I reduce the technology footprint in my office and go more to a cloud-based system?
Now, do you have specialties of industry? Because I would imagine, like, kind of the concerns of a doctor's office would be different than an advertising agency or a restaurant.
Yeah, we really don't. I mean, we stay up to date on all the technologies across business use. It's not personal. It's just the business side of things. We get into the personal side sometimes with the leaders of organizations or individuals that are remote for one reason or another. But we don't really have a vertical per se. You know, our top customers are public service, restaurants, manufacturing, law, finance, legal, they're all over the place.
Are they government? Do you work for the government at all?
Yeah, State of Georgia is one of our biggest customers. We do library services for the state libraries of Georgia.
So now when you're working with, like, say, a medical facility, is that like the privacy and hacking and stuff like that? Do you got to kind of be ninjas with that, right?
Yeah, it's like security is huge, and it has been for, gosh, well over 10 years, maybe going into 20 at this point. You know, Congress makes a lot of rules and regulations, and then sometimes they actually pass laws that you have to abide by. You know, we have to be compliant as well. So a lot of times, in fact, we're in the middle right now for one of our larger financial services firm. You know, we're filling out a full compliance for the state of New York, because the firm offers financial services in the state of New York. And so because we provide technology services to them and we have access to some of their data and systems, we also have to go through a compliance process, and we do that with regularity.
And that's not uncommon, right?
No, it's not uncommon. Whether you're in finance, we have financial customers, we have banking customers, and a lot of them, if they do outsource any of their work in the technology arena, because of the new laws and regulations that Congress has passed in, say, the last 12, 15 years, a lot of times we have to have all of our background checks and compliance things done as well.
Even though you're kind of a vendor for them,
yes,
you still have to be as if you are them.
Right, exactly. As if we are them, in terms of compliance, in terms of security, in terms of our HR practices, insurance and liability limits, all of those things get checked for us for quite a large variety of our customers.
Now, as part of your advisory services, do you help protect them, like, from kind of the human factor when it comes to security? like the phishing and the hacking and things like that?
Yeah, it's all too common these days. I mean, I think probably everybody in here has gotten an email from themselves, right, asking for their passwords
or seeing a phone number on my like a phone number that's like almost exactly my phone number.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen some really interesting cases of that exact type of thing, and some of them are actually legal. Like, for example, if I had a show called Business Radio XM that I can actually send out information and use kind of your information to make it look like maybe I'm from you, but as long as I always say XM, even if it's in small little letters on the bottom of my email, then I'm absolutely legal. And so the lines are getting blurred a lot of times with what's going on, but it's something that we deal with regularly with phishing attacks and with security and trying to help people be smart about using their phone devices, especially because these days almost everything that you have access to it has some kind of access from your phone.
Right. And I, Katie was at an event for Women in Technology, and they had a speaker that was talking about, like, you can get hacked by, like, your Roomba vacuum cleaner, like can have access to Wi-Fi, and all of a sudden they can use that as a lever to get into.
Yeah, it's amazing with a lot of the technologies now that try to anticipate what you want and what you might want, right, especially from a marketing perspective. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's been a lot of questions about the Alexa, because a lot of times Alexa is recording what you say. And if you right. have one in your house, and the Google device does as well, but the devices actually record what you say in order to try to get a history, in order to try to be more specific about when you ask a question. Are you talking about, you know, trains like your kids might play with? Are you talking about the train schedule out of Atlanta to Washington, D.C., for example? And so there's been a lot of debate about whether or not it's legal to do that, one. Two, whether or not that information is subpoenable, you know, in a law arena. Can I say I want to get all the information off of Daryl's Alexa from in his kitchen, you know, for this legal thing that's going on? So, you know, it's very interesting. There's been a shift kind of recently, and I'll say in the past 6-8 years to all these devices that we're getting. People just fly past the okay buttons, okay, right? They don't even think about it. And you're actually signing away all your rights to where you are, what you said, what you did, what you searched for, and people don't even realize it.
Right. It's one of those things, like I was getting an app that was a level, you know, like the yeah. level. And it was like, you're telling us we can have access to your photographs. It's like, why would you need my why do you need to know my contacts and my photographs? Like, why, in order to, you know, right. so I can see if the picture's straight or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You know, one of the most recent ones I saw was Allstate. I have Allstate insurance, for example, and they wanted to put an app on my phone and all of my kids' phones, because they're just now starting to drive, that would tell them things like how fast they were going, you know, where they might not have stopped at a stop sign, right. those types of things. And they bill it under a protection good driver discount, right?
Right.
But then they're collecting all this information. And so, I mean, you gotta be concerned about, I'm concerned about, you know, where does the information go? Who has access to it? How long is it kept? When will it be available? And those are all valid questions.
And I guess it boils down to trust, right? Like, do you trust them? Is that a worthy person to share that information with?
You know, I think for most people, it doesn't boil down to trust. And I think that's probably the problem. I think for most people, it boils down to ease of use, because there's always, on the one hand, the security of something. And then on the other hand, how easy and pervasive is it in order for people to use it? And most of the time, people will just choose that easy, pervasive pathway, and they don't even think about the safety and security of things. So when customers come to us, I frequently say, you know, that's the balance you're always trying to strike, is how do we make it easy to use for our purpose, but how do we keep it secure so that it can't be used for somebody else's?
So when you're consulting in this area about their business, how do you kind of help them? You just make them aware, and then it's their call on where they want to be on that kind of balance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk to all different types of firms. Architecture is one where we have several customers as well. And we talk to them about, you know, a lot of times they want to have architects out of the office be able to access the drawings and the files and right. the video and the pictures. And we talk to them about, you know, okay, we can do that. Here are several different ways you could do that based on either equipment that you already have, or equipment that you could get, or knowledge that you're familiar with, or your customer base. You know, your customer base is mostly 30, 40 somethings maybe. You know, what are they used to using technologically? And you know, here are the pluses and minuses you have to deal with. And usually that security versus ease of use is not just for the tech people, it's also for the end user. And that's why we weigh so heavily now toward the ease of use, because everybody wants to make everything very easy for their end users to use.
And that's the challenge is like from a consumer standpoint, when you're especially like in finance, you want the money instantly, but then they have to check to see if you're who you say you are instantly, right? That puts a lot of pressure on the system.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of our closing attorney's clients actually had an issue around that recently. She got an email that looked like it was from our client, the closing attorney, and it was actually just a forged header email. And the email was day of closing. Somehow this person got the information about when their closing was and how much the property was selling for. And so they sent an email to this private individual saying, hey, I'm contacting you on behalf of this closing firm. There's been a change of plans. We need you to wire the money directly to this account before you come to the closing today. And she actually sent the money because it looked like it was from her closing firm. And it was all fake. And she wound up getting the money back and talking to the FBI. And I mean, those are the types of things that happen.
Because the bad guys, this is what they do for a living.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, email. I could send you an email right now and tell you I'm Bozo the Clown. I mean, email doesn't know anything but whatever it's given. And so there is no checks and balances, and it goes where it's told to go, and it presents me as whoever I tell it to present me as.
So now, when you're working with a customer, what is your usual first point of entry?
We have a couple of different kinds of customers. If customers are doing new projects, then a lot of times we'll come in because they have some uncertainty around something. Because we do such a wide variety of consulting services, perhaps if you're opening a doctor's office, for example, somebody might have an idea about what technology they may want to use. Maybe they want to use all Apple laptops. Maybe they want to use iPads. Maybe they want certain kind of printers. But they don't really have an idea about how to put the whole thing together. And so they would come to us in the beginning, much like Travis was talking about, whenever they're looking to get a plan together so they can figure out exactly what is it do we need, what are the parts, how will it work, how will it all work together, and who are all the players that we need to get involved.
And then so you're trying to get kind of a holistic view of the situation.
Absolutely.
So that way you can go, okay, if everybody has got an Apple, then we can attack it this way. Or if they're, you know, you have different equipment, we have to deal with it this way. Because most of the time, the client doesn't know, right?
No, the client usually doesn't know. What the client usually knows is, you know, how they want to do business, right? This is the way I want things to work for my business. They also will know what is it that they're familiar enough with to be able to use themselves. So if we walk into, for example, an artistic company, you know, perhaps everybody there is used to using Apple products. If we walk into a technology firm, to help them, then everybody there is probably more used to using Windows-based or sometimes Linux-based products. And for us, it doesn't matter. We stay up on all of that. So
you're agnostic.
We can use any technology, anything you want to use. We can help you figure out how to use it for what you want to do.
And there's pros and cons of each of them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if the more homogenous that your environment is, the easier it is to administrate, the easier it is for a layman to understand, the easier it is for somebody to just order parts and be able to go through the management process on the inside. The more you allow a bunch of different technologies, which is really what we've been moving towards for a good 2+ decades now, the more difficult it is to administer that and to understand that entire scenario.
So now... what's your challenge? How important is it for you to stay up with like talent? Like, is it difficult for you to find the right talent to do this? Because it sounds like you're very customer focused and you got to kind of bridge technology that's sometimes confusing and overwhelming with somebody who isn't that educated and doesn't understand the ramifications of certain decisions.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the constant focus. From the HR side, you know, we can't use the average Georgia Tech graduate, not to pick on them, but I am from Tech, so I'm allowed to use them as an example, you know, who understands the bits and the bytes and, you know, can work in the back room, but we need people who can be out and consult in front of CEOs, CFOs, chairmen. That's the type of work that we do. We help business to decide what technologies to use and how to use them for their specific business purposes. So it's always difficult from the HR side to get the people who understand the technology enough to be able to learn a wide breadth of it and also can speak to business people.
And then do it in a consultative manner, right? Because this is a lot of asking questions, having a lot of empathy, which may be a different kind of skill set.
Oh, no, it is totally a different skill set. And it's one thing that is always on the forefront of what we do. You know, we have a saying in our place that technology is number one and customer service is number one. And in every situation, you have to figure out which one is really number one right now. Because some people just want to hear you say, I've got it, right? And then right. they go away and they do whatever is important to them in the moment because I've just accepted responsibility. However, if you're trying to do a show and your laptop's not working, then if you have a technician there, you're going to stand over him until it's working because you can't do anything else until that's working, right? And so in every situation, you have to figure out, is it the customer service piece that's most important? If I tell Lee, hey, I've got this, give me 20 minutes, right? Then you'll go away for 15 and you'll come back, right? Or is it, it's got to be right this second. And the most important thing is a technical piece. Lee's going to stand over me until it's done because he can't do his next thing until this is done.
So now, recently you've been awarded Best and Brightest Companies to Work For?
Yes, from 101 Best and Brightest of Atlanta.
So why was that important to go, kind of get that award or try for that award?
You know, one of the things that they focus on is the HR component, and because it is very difficult for us from a recruiting standpoint because what we do is so different from what a standard technologist does. It was important to hear from our people and also from the industry that the things that we're offering and the way that we're managing and the way that we're inciting greatness in our employees is really above and beyond, and we continue to strive for even better every year.
Now, when you're working in this field, it seems like it can become like kind of a commodity field for the customer, could see them everybody as similar.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one thing that happens. We occasionally will send quotes out and we'll get an email back from a customer saying, hey, you know, this one line item on your quote of 25 things I need for my network, I found that on eBay and it's a little cheaper. I always go, you're right. You know, it is cheaper on eBay, but unfortunately it's used. I don't know what status it in. I don't know how much work I'd have to put into it in order to get it up to full spec, you know, or maybe CDW, for example, or Amazon. I can get these, you know, 5 cents cheaper on Amazon. We don't really deal in the commodity pieces. I mean, I tell customers all the time, you know, if there's something that you want to get from somewhere else, that's fine with us because we're agnostic. If you want to hand me 5 laptops and say, hey, make these 5 laptops part of the solution, then okay, we'll do that. We'll tell you how much work we got to put into that and what it's going to mean for you to integrate those 5 pieces of equipment into the solution that you say you want. What we bring to the table is that total solution. So whether you're using an Android or an iPhone or an Apple laptop or a Chromebook, we're going to make everything work together and do what you need for your business.
And then so in order to do that, are you selling this as a kind of a subscription or is a monthly retainer, or is it am I buying a project from you? How does the buying and selling of your work?
It's all of the above. So for a lot of our really smaller clients, let's say 10 people and fewer, they use us on just an hourly basis. Some of them do buy block time, so they get a discount because they know they're going to use us recurringly over the course of a year or 2 years. A lot of companies come to us with individual projects. If you wanted to put in a brand new integrated phone system that worked with your marketing material and your website and your HR system, you might come to us and help you plan out first, you know, what kind of phone system should I look at? How much is it going to cost me? Where should I get them? How long will it last? How do I need to administer it? How are my people going to use it? And then the last one is regular recurring companies do put us on retainer for things. So maybe we have 7 onto Whole Foods down a little 5. They've been a customer of ours for decades, and you know they have a regular need every single month, and so we have a retainer relationship with them, and they know that their things are going to get done. We do the work automatically. We send them results of what's done. They review it, and then anytime something pops up, they call us.
And so you mentioned that your clients are a wide variety. It's anybody that uses technology, which today is pretty much every business.
It is pretty much every business. I mean, what we say is companies that use technology to drive their business needs, right? So, you know, a company that maybe is manufacturing hangers might not need technology to drive that. If their computers are down, probably the manufacturing can still be running in the back office or in the back of the warehouse. But we do actually have quite a few manufacturing customers because we support everything in the front of the house. So, you know, it is just about everybody that's using technology in one way or another today. But those companies where the tech really drives the sales, drives their ability to give their service, those are the ones that, you know, can't really have their technology down for any amount of time, or they realize they're losing a lot of money in the process.
So now what's the pain that they're having where they're going, I got to call the Emerald folks?
You know, it's a really wide range because of our consultative analysis services. It could be, you know, anything from I feel like my other vendors, you know, aren't giving me information. You know, just about everybody after your first couple of years of dealing with a phone or an internet vendor, you get an increase in your bill, right? And what's your option? Your option is either I pay it or I cut the service off, or they cut my service off. So we deal with a lot of renegotiations. We deal with a lot of new. Anytime a business is expanding or moving or opening up, we deal with a lot of that, helping them understand who are all the vendors that are involved. How do I get started? If it's a traditional business that's already going, it's usually about the pain. Somebody comes to us with, you know, I really can't do what I want with this part of my business. I really like Revit, but Revit doesn't do exactly what I want. And I don't think MicroStation does either. So, you know, I'm looking for what I can really do in my architecture firm and how I can do it with what technology is available.
And then you're kind of a guru in all different industries, all the technology?
We are, and that's one of the ways that we're really different. A lot of technology firms are based off the MSP model, managed services platforms, where basically you list all the devices that you want covered and you have a monthly or annual contract, and they take care of those and keep them running. What we do is consultative. Everything that we do is custom to each individual company and customer and situation. So when somebody comes to us and they say, you know, here's what I really want to do, I'm just not getting it. I feel like maybe I have all the pieces, or I'm just missing something, or these two things won't talk to each other. You know, I've got this Apple device and this Microsoft device, and they just don't play well together. You know, how do I get that to work, and how do I get it to do what I want?
And then, so from that point, then you build a relationship and you solve that problem, and then you just kind of are available as the needs expand, which I would imagine they typically do. Expand.
Yeah, no, it goes from there. I mean, we've been in business since 88, as we talked about before. So we incorporated in 89. We're celebrating officially our 30 year next year, mm-hmm. which should be really nice. But we get a lot of even technology companies who do very similar things to what we do. They will call us because they like to do their small list of things. You know, they do these very well. They want to stay in their boundaries. Anything outside of that, they want to bring somebody else in just to help them as well. So we have a good 30, 40 or so other technology firms in Atlanta, big names that you would all know, who come to us to help them with their technology when it's outside the realm of what they want to be doing. And then we continue to do that either directly with the customer or on behalf of their technology firm through them.
Do you work with startups or investment firms to see if the startup has the right equipment, or is everything so they can start from a strong foundation rather than kind of cobble something together that may be not kind of be able to stand the test of time?
Yeah, in the beginning, especially with startups, you know, especially if you've gotten a good amount of funding, a lot of things get misappropriated right from the start. People sign for example, they might sign a deal for cell phones that's maybe going to be 3 years for their 30 new employees. They might sign a deal for their internet services that's only a year. They might sign a deal for their traditional phone services in their office that's maybe a 5-year deal. And so those things all get out of line, and they're parts of each of those that both augment and enhance each other, and sometimes they overlap and you're paying in two places for them. So with a lot of startups, we help them figure out, okay, how much do I really need to get the things that I want? What things do I really not want, and more specifically, don't want to pay for to begin with? And how do I keep all my contracts and all the technology in alignment so that if I go to move in 2 months, or if I decide I'm going to expand in a year, I don't wind up having to pay a bunch of people off, getting out of contracts that I probably shouldn't have signed in the beginning.
Do you help customers with kind of audits or assessments in order to see where they stand? Is that a point of entry for you as well?
Yeah, we do that. And depending on why they're doing them and who they're doing them for, like for our financial planning customer, you know, they're doing it for the state of New York. And so we're helping them because we're on the inside. We can also be on the outside. So if a company is getting audited and they have an IT person who has access to all their internal systems, we can come in and do an external audit. And by doing that, we're saying we don't have any internal access. We are saying, here are the issues that we see. We can't remediate any of these, and we don't have an ongoing situation with them. So it, depending on the issue at hand and who they're dealing with, whether it's federal regulators, state regulators, city, or if they're just doing it for their own purposes, or maybe a bank is requiring it of them, then we can come in and help them with those things and also bring other people in. A lot of our current customers, especially in financial services, you know, because we do the internal piece, we have to bring an external vendor in to do an outside audit. Because we have access keys to the kingdom, we can make any changes we want. So somebody who doesn't have that has to do all the technology auditing and say, here's what I see, here are the risks, and then we do what's called remediation, if there is any at that point.
So now, if somebody wanted to learn more and have more substantive conversation, you're open to conversations before there's problems, right?
You want
to
absolutely.
Build a relationship to kind of get the lay of the land to see what you can and can't do for them.
Before is always better, but you know,
I'm sure most of your business is after a crisis, then it becomes obvious I got to make a change.
Yeah, during the crisis, somebody calls me because they've got some kind of pain, and you know, that's perfect. You know, we really like to hear from you as soon as you feel like you need something, and the upfront consultation is no charge. We're happy to talk to you to see if it makes sense. We don't do everything like we discussed in the beginning. We're not going to help you do creative for your website and take pictures and pick fonts and that kind of thing. But you know, being around in the Atlanta marketplace for 30 years, we deal with all those other companies who do those things.
So you probably know who they are, the good ones,
we
right?
We absolutely make referrals to them.
And if somebody wants to learn more, what's your website?
It's emeralddata.net. So emerald like the stone, E-M-E-R-A-L-D, second word data, D-A-T-A, so there are two D's in the middle, and then .net.
Good stuff, Daryl. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.